Okay, let's make a start. Really nice to see everybody. Bokitov, welcome. I would like to start by making an announcement about the sponsorship for today. The Shir today is sponsored, and we're very grateful for the sponsorship, to commemorate the birthday of Lewis Mack. With thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so a commemoration of that birthday, and many happy returns. And the Shir is also sponsored by Philip Savrinsky, in loving memory of his mother Bluma Rachel, Bat Chaim Chuna HaKoyen, Aleha Shalom. Please God, the Shir should be an Aliyah for her neshama. And it should also be a tzchus for all of those who need a Refuah Shleima. Again, we encourage and are grateful for all the sponsorship we have. And would encourage you to be in touch with Mrs. Spivak if you're able to sponsor the Shir. I would just repeat what I mentioned last week, also, which is that when we used to be in situ in the OU Israel Center, we did ask people to make a donation at the door, and we would be more than grateful to receive something from anyone who can in order to keep the Shirim going, to keep the teachers teaching, and to keep all of the connection that Baruch Hashem that we have. So, last week, we started talking about exotic kashrut issues. And I'd like to continue that, Be'ezrat Hashem, this week. There are basically four types of kashrut classification in terms of animals, etc. There are fish, there are birds, there are mammals, and there are invertebrates. Meaning, we'll see soon, locusts, etc., etc. Last week, we talked about fish. We looked at the swordfish. Actually, somebody sent me a very interesting email. I didn't have a chance to respond yet, about the king clip. Anybody who is South African will know that there's been a whole discussion about whether the king clip is kosher or not. In the same kind of way as the swordfish and the sturgeon, etc., usually the issue with fish, like we saw last week, is whether there are kosher scales or not, whether the scales classify as for kashrus as kaskasim. Today I want to deal with birds. And we're going to look at turkey. Turkey is the most interesting example. It's going to be quite amusing moments, I imagine, as well. But certainly interesting moments. Next week, I want to move on to mammals. And I want to look at the interesting case of the zebu. And also, we'll pick up a couple of other issues about giraffes and about the bent pikua as well. And in the last year, in a couple of weeks from now, I want to finish off this mini-series talking about the issue of locusts. Most of us have probably never even thought about locusts halakhically, but there is a lot to say, and they deserve at least one shear out of a series to talk about them. But today, as I said, I'd like to talk about turkey, we'll know a lot more about turkey and about Masorah by the end of the shear than the beginning. If I could just remind you, like I normally do, if there is any problem with the internet, if things freeze, don't worry, please don't leave. I will be back with you just as soon as I possibly can, usually seconds later. So hopefully there will be no glitches, but if there are, then stay cool, and I will be back with you immediately, hopefully thereafter. Fine, let's talk about turkey. What I want to do now is spend around 25 minutes or so talking about the background. Unless you know the background about what makes a bird kosher, you're not going to really understand what the issues are about turkey. So before we start talking about turkeys, let's talk about birds generally and understand what makes a bird kosher and what makes a bird not kosher. So let me share the sheets with you. Hopefully you can see those now. Excuse me. So unlike fish, the Torah does not give simanim for birds, which makes it much more interesting to try and work out which birds are and which birds are not kosher. Turkey, by the way, you should know, Israelis consume more turkey than any other, per capita, than any other nation in the world. Basically, pastrami. Turkey pastrami is apparently our thing. Turkey meat is a quarter of all of our meat production and a half of our fowl production. And we're one of the largest turkey producers in the entire world, which makes it very interesting that it's not even clear that turkey is kosher. That the Jewish state is one of the largest producers of a bird, which is questionable in terms of its kashrus, is one of the interesting ironies of modern life. We will see by the end of the shir that the consensus is that turkey is kosher, but we'll see how we get there as we go through. So let's start from the very beginning. Actually, this week's Parsha, Parsha Sra'ei, is one of the main sources here. But the Torah gives two sources for the kashrus of birds, one in Parsha Shmini in Vayikra and one in Parsha Re'e in Dvarim. They are very similar. Let's look at them both. Number one. The following birds are sheket. They are vermin to you. They are disgusting. Don't eat them. Loi yeyachlu. You mustn't eat them. Sheket tein. They are sheket to you. And it gives a list of all the non-kosher, the trace birds. Et hanesher, ve'et haperes, ve'et haoznia. Now, I brought you the translation here that Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan brings in his Living Torah. It's not clear that these are indeed the exact birds that the Torah is talking about. Rabbi Kaplan is an amazing researcher, was an amazing researcher, and the chances are these are not just random guesses, they're educated guesses, but don't take them too literally. But we've got here the Nesher, the Peres, the Azniyah, which he translates as the eagle, the ossifrage, and the osprey, the Eta Da'a, the Eta Aya Lumina, and then the kite and the vulture Lumina, and all of its species, the Et Kol Orev Lumina, every kind of raven species, Ve'et bat ya'ana, the ostrich, ve'et ha'tachmas, the owl, it says here, ve'et ha'shachaf, the shachaf, the gull, ve'et ha'net, l'mineho, and all kinds of hawk. Ve'et ha'kos, the kos, it translates as the falcon, ve'et ha'shalach, ve'et ha'yanshuf, which is the cormorant and the ibis, ve'et ha'tinshemet, the swan, the ka'a, the pelican, ve'et ha'racham, and the magpie, finally, ve'et ha'chasida, we'll see soon the chasida, the stork, ha'anafa, the heron, lumina, according to all its species and family, the et ha'duchifat, and the duchifat, we'll come back to what that is soon, the hoopoe, the duchifat is actually the national bird of Israel, as far as I'm aware, so the duchifat is the hoopoe, the et ha'atalef, and the atalef is a bat. Now, obviously, a bat is a mammal, not a bird, but it flies, and as far as the Torah classification is concerned, it fits into this list. So here's a list of birds, and some of them go with species which are not kosher and are shekets. In Dvarim, in Parshas Re'eh, there is a very similar list. I'm not going to read the whole thing again. There are a few slight differences. It starts off by saying, number two, kol tzipor tahora tochelu. You may eat any bird which is tahor, which is kosher, and then it goes through the list of more or less the same birds which are not kosher. A few nuances here and there. There are more kinds of vulture. The Rashi and the general Mephoshim harmonize the two lists so that you can put them all together. But in Dvarim, there's a virtually identical list, and it turns out that there are 24 non-kosher birds. These are the 24 birds, and their species, obviously there will be similar types within that species. These are the birds that you cannot eat. The direct implication is that everything else that's not on this list is kosher. And in fact, Rashi, I don't know why I stopped sharing the screen there, let me share it back again. Rashi says immediately, number three, ba'ofot piret lecha hatmeim. With birds, it specifies the non-kosher birds. L'lamed she'ha'ofat ha'torim merubim al hatmeim. Telling you that the kosher birds are in the vast majority. L'fikach piret et ha'mu'et. And therefore, it's a mu'at. It specifies the minority, but the kosher birds are the majority. As opposed to, says Zibchachamim Asher Einkein Bebehema, when it comes to the animal kingdom, Bechayer, and the, we'll see what Behemoth and Chayer are next week, Shepiri Lechatahorim, it only specifies the kosher ones really, gives you signs for the kosher ones. It does talk about a few non-kosher ones as well, but the vast majority of animals are traits. Jews are virtual vegetarians when it comes to the animal kingdom. All we eat basically is beef and, sheep. Cows and sheep and a few things a bit like them. But when it comes to the birds in the world, we basically can eat almost all of them. There are just 24 that we can't eat. We just have to work out which of these 24 are the ones flying around us and avoid them. Now, of course, if you wanted to be completely, completely on the safe side, there are two birds that the Torah specifically lists as kosher. They're not in this list. But they are, of course, the birds that you can bring as korbanot. A korban has to be a kosher animal, and therefore the tur, the turtle dove, and the ben yonah, the pigeon, are definitely kosher. And I suppose you can add to this list the slav, which is the quail, which the Jewish people ate in the desert as well. But these two birds, certainly, the tur and the ben yonah, are most certainly on the kosher list. And actually, a little bit of trivia, the Karaites only ate those two kinds of birds. The Karaites didn't want to rely on any kind of rabbinic tradition, as is their wont, and they only ate pigeons and turtle doves. And in fact, the Ibn Ezra has a dig. The Ibn Ezra usually has a dig wherever he can at the Karaites, although, in fairness, when they come up with a good chat, the Ibn Ezra is prepared to quote them too, which got him into some trouble. But he has a dig every now and then, and he has a dig at them because of chicken. Now, Jews have been eating chicken, I don't know about Friday night specifically, but Jews have been eating chicken for nearly 3,000 years. So don't worry about chickens. Chickens are definitely kosher. And the Ibn Ezra says the following, number four, on the word duchifat, which we usually translate as a hoopoo, Amru has Sadoikim, Sadoikim here means the Karaites, not the original Sadducees, the Karaites saying, Shehi Aparnigolet, so the duchifat, one of the trace birds, is the chicken. The Eile Tipshe Olam, and they are world-class fools. Only a fool would not eat chicken, says the Ibn Ezra. So we know that the Ibn Ezra liked his Friday night chicken. Who told them that the duchifat was a chicken? Everybody knows that chickens are kosher, he says. Foolish Karaites, they only eat pigeons. I don't know who would really want to eat a pigeon, quite frankly. If my wife served me pigeon on Friday night, there might be some comments made. I'm sure it will be delicious because everything else she cooks is delicious. But chicken certainly are normally on the Jewish menu, but for the Karaites weren't. So if just in case you ever go to a Karaite home for Shabbos, which I don't recommend because, you know, it's not probably advisable halakhically, not only will you sit in the dark on Friday night, but you will probably not get your cold chicken. Fine. So these 24 kinds of birds are treif. Everything else is kosher. But we don't have any signs. Comes along the Mishnah and says, don't worry, the rabbis will give you some signs. And this is where it begins to get interesting. And again, remember, please, all of this. And when we get to turkeys in about 15 minutes, we'll plug it all in. Says the Mishnah like this. Simani behema v'chaya nemru min ha-Torah. The Mishnah says that the Torah gave simanim, gave signs for animals. The simani ha'oif lo nemru, but it didn't give any signs for birds. Aval amru chachamim, but the rabbis did. The rabbis gave a few signs. Kol oif hadoreis tamei. If a bird is dores, this is a critical word. This is probably the key word of today's share. What does dores mean? We translate it as a bird of prey. It tramples. We'll soon see what the definitions of dores could be. If a bird is a bird of prey, tamei. That's for sure trei. And signs of kosher birds. Kol sheyesh lo etzba yetera. If a bird has an extra finger on the other side of its foot, okay, apart from the other ones, that's a good sign. The zefek, if it has a crop, okay, that is very important as well. The kurkava, ukurkavan, and if it has a kurkavan, the kurkavan, no, a kurkavan is the gizzard, what in Yiddish is called the pipik, okay. If it has a gizzard, which is niklaf, which can be peeled, we'll see soon what this means, tahor. Then there's three kosher signs. Again, what are the kosher signs? An extra toe, a crop, and a peelable gizzard. They're not in the Torah, but they are in the Mishnah. If a bird parts its toes like this, we'll see what that means soon, that's another good sign, but that's not in the main three. So here we have three signs which we're going to come back to again and again and again. If we're looking for a kosher bird, even though the Torah doesn't give these signs, we're going to ask, does it have an extra toe? Does it have a crop? And does it have a peelable gizzard? If the answer to all of those three are yes, then we're getting there. Okay, my internet just went a little bit strange, but hopefully I am still with you. The Tosefta gives a few extra signs. It talks about a bird that grabs its prey in flight. That is also a bad sign. That is a sign of a non-kosher bird. It talks about a bird that walks on a rope with two toes on one side and two toes on the other side. That's a bad sign as well. It should have three and one. And it also, at the end, gives a little test which we'll come back to soon. Look at number six at the end. Acherim oimrim hashochen ben hatzmeim v'doimel hatzmeim. If a bird likes hanging around with treif birds and it looks like them, tamei. That's a bad sign. Hashochen ben hatzahorim. But if a bird likes hanging around with kosher birds v'doimel hatzahorim and it looks like them, tahor. Then it's a good sign. Now again, I hope you're already beginning to think about turkeys and whether turkeys look like chickens. What do they look like? Who do they hang out with? We'll see soon how turkeys fit into all of this. So we have a list of signs, suggested signs for kosher birds, for non-kosher birds. Finally, in this section anyway, the Gemara comes and says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, if all these signs are rather confusing, Oif tahor nechol ma'masoret. Don't worry, you can eat a kosher bird if there is a masoret. Also very important word here. What's a masoret? A masoret is a tradition. A tradition in one community or a community or a number of communities that this bird is kosher. Now, don't get this wrong. This is using the concept of masoret as a leniency, not a stringency. This is saying if you're not sure what all these signs are and you can't find whatever, if a bird has a masoret in a community, that's good enough. Ne'eman hatzayid, also the Gemara says, a hunter can be trusted to say, oif zeh tahor, I know this bird is a kosher one. Masali Rebbe, my Rebbe taught me this. Okay? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'hu shibaki behem u'mishmoseyem. That if we know that this hunter is an expert and he knows the names of the birds. And then the Gemara asks, Boy Rebbe Zeira, Rabbi, what does it mean his Rebbe? Chacham, does it mean his local Orthodox rabbi? Or Rabbi Tzayat, or his Rebbe in hunting, his master when he was an apprentice? Shmamina, the Gemara goes through a back and forth and says, Rabbi Tzay Shmamina. It means his Rebbe, his teacher in hunting. So the Gemara here has given us a few other options. It's saying, look, if you don't really understand how the signs work, if you've got a reliable hunter who has a tradition of training from good hunters, then that's good enough. And also, if you come to a community where they have a masoret, then that's also good enough. Again, these things, at the moment, are leniencies rather than stringencies, but we'll see how that goes. So what have we seen so far? So far we've seen that the four main signs that we're looking for in a bird is, number one, is it a bird of prey? If so, a doref, you're out. And then we're looking for three main good signs, which is an extra toe, a crop, an appealable gizzard. And then there are some other signs as well. We see if it walks this way or walks that way, who does it hang out with? And then we can rely on a hunter, we can rely on a masoret, etc. So hopefully we are now all set to go out there into the wild and check out which birds are kosher and which birds are not. Remembering that the vast majority should be kosher, because only that list of 24 are trade. Now, what is a doref? This is when life begins to get a little bit more sticky. Because we've just said, if a bird is a bird of prey, it's no good. The problem is there are 8 or 9 different definitions of what is a bird of prey in halacha. I brought a few of them here. Some say it's a bird that grabs its prey with its claws and then lifts it off the ground and eats it. Some say it's a bird that holds down its prey and then pecks bits off it. Some say that it's a bird that tramples on its food with its feet, whether it's dead or alive or animal or vegetable. Others say it's a bird that eats its prey when it's alive, when the prey is alive, live birds. They don't count worms and things like that. Some say it's a bird that hits its prey before it eats them. Others say it's a claws with venom. Others say it's a bird that grabs its prey in flight and then, you know, grabs it and then comes down to the ground. So you see that we've got a problem here. Which of these definitions of a bird of prey are we going to use? Some of them? All of them? So we're already in a little bit of a sophic zone. I know I can't eat a bird of prey, but what exactly is a bird of prey? And then we get to the three signs. And we have a fundamental machlokas. Are these three good signs, remember the extra toe, the crop, the peelable gizzard, are these additional to the bird of prey issue, or are they exclusive? Are they together with it? Meaning, do they come together with it? Do you need all four signs effectively? Or can you have the three on their own, even without the issue of the doref? And Rashi says very, very clearly, you need all four signs. Look at this Rashi, this is very important Rashi. He quotes these three signs, the Etz B'Yaseira, the Zefek, the Kurkavan, etc. Says like this, Aresha Samech. These are all going on the initial statement. The Tanalei, as we've been taught, Kol Oif Hadoref Tame. That any bird which is a bird of prey is Tame. Once you know it's not a bird of prey, then you go looking for these three signs. Im ein of Doref, says Rashi, if you know it's not a bird of prey, Ve'yeshlo Oif Shlasha Simanum, and then he has the other three good ones, good signs, Dehavalu Arba, that means four signs in total, V'yadua Shehu Tahor. Oh. So according to Rashi, I need actually four signs. I need to know it's not a bird of prey, and I need to have these extra three positive signs. And it's not always clear. And the Gemara gives some horror stories about how things went wrong. Look at this number 9. Here's a Gemara from Chulin. Says the Gemara in Chulin as follows. Tarnagoyla de Agma. This kind of swamp rooster. Tarnagol, it's a male. The swamp rooster Chad mishmona sveikatu. First of all, it says this is one of the birds that they're not sure about. And then in the next breath, the Gemara says, Amar Papa, no. Taranigola da Agma, this swamp rooster, Asira, no, it's straight. Okay, it's straight. Taranigolta da Agma, what about the swamp hen? Leaving aside what this is, this swamp Taranigola, okay, Taranigolet, Sharia, it's mutter. It's okay. The simanech, and how do I know that the female is okay, the male is not okay? He brings the pasuk, Amoni v'lo Amonit. Just like the male Ammonites were not kosher to marry and the females were, so the male swamp roosters are not good and the females are good. Zarish Marema, but then Marema comes along and says, no, Tarnagolta da Agma Asira. This swamp hen is actually treif. Chazia da Darsa, because they started eating it. And then they saw that it was Doreth, that it was standing on its food or whatever, the achla, and then eating on it, eating its food, and then they stopped eating it. They'd all made a terrible mistake. Meaning, the rabbis, even at the time of the Gemara, had been eating a certain hen, because they assumed it looked okay, and then they saw that it wasn't okay, and then everybody realized they'd all been eating sheket, they'd all been eating something which was very trace. And Rashi jumps in on this and says, you see from this, another important principle. Not only did Rashi say that in principle you need all four signs, but he says today you can't even rely on them. Look at number 10. When we talk she'ein anu b'kiyim bahem, we don't really know what we're doing with birds, he says. Nira li za'oif habal lefaneinu. If we get a new bird that comes in front of us, yesh loima shema yidrot, we have to always be worried. Maybe it's a bird of prey. Maybe even if we didn't see yet, maybe it'll turn out that way. Jahahach tarnagolta da'akma. Look at this story of the swamp hen, he says. Have a machzikim batara. They assumed it was kosher and they ate it. Well, achazman, and after a while, ra'usha doreset. They saw it was a bird of prey. The ein oif nechalanu eleba masoires. Oif shemasru lanu avoseinu batara. And he brings a new principle, which is, as far as I'm concerned, says Rashi, we may not eat any bird anymore unless there is a masora. Now, the Gemara mentioned masora and said that Masora is good as a leniency. If I'm not sure what the signs are, if people eat it, that's fine. Rashi's using it as a stringency. He's saying, you know something? Forget about signs. Signs are misleading. Look at this case in the Gemara where they thought they saw the signs and then the bird turned out to be trait. As far as I'm concerned, you may not eat any bird unless there is a clear Masora from our fathers that this bird is kosher. V'sheloi masrulanu, if a bird has not got a Masora, yesh lachush. We must always be concerned that it's trait. Maybe it's a zoreth. But if it has a Masora, yesh lanu lismach, we can rely on the Masora, as the Gemara said. Now, that's actually quite a stringency, if you think about it. Rashi has now come along and said, as far as I'm concerned, you can't eat anything unless it has a clear tradition that Jews have been eating it. Now, we're going to have to ask, how much of a tradition does it need? Who makes traditions? Can you switch traditions, etc., etc.? But Rashi has introduced a new principle here, which is that you really can't trust the signs at all. Not everybody agrees. There is another opinion in the Rishonim out there, and we'll soon see who stacks up on which side. But the Aruch HaShulchan mentions here, Oiv Shita Yesh, there is another main view, Lachad Mi Rav Vata, She'alei Hiskima Roiv Rabboseinu. As far as he's concerned, most of the rabbis relied on this other opinion, the Hishitat Haram Bar Yosef. Okay, Rav Moshe Bar Yosef, which is one of the rabbis of Provence, the Ma'or, and he's brought in the Bala Ma'or from the south of France, from the Rishonim, and he says as follows, Oif sheyesh lo gimel simanim shebegufoy huvadai tahor. If it has the three signs, that's good enough. Rak l'shitat rashi tzarech gam ledat im eino dores. You only need this fourth sign, you have to be sure that it's not a bird of prey, only according to Rashi. The kevan devayin andrisa, since because of the issue of bird of prey, there is all sorts of questions you may go wrong. In Cain, therefore, ein lismoch al simanim, you can't rely on simanim, but tzarech masoreth, and therefore you need a tradition. Now, let's just summarize where we are so far. There are basically, and I brought this on the sheet for you, there are basically three approaches. The most lenient approach to birds is as follows, which you only need three signs. This is the approach of, we saw Rav Moshe Bar Yosef, the Ramban, the Rashban, the Ran, and many others. This is the most lenient approach. There is actually an approach that maybe we even need two, if one of them is the gizzard, but let's go with three. Once we find three signs, which again, the extra toe, the crop, the peelable gizzard, then we can assume that it's not a Doreth. We can assume that it's fine. Those three signs are really all we need. according to some, even if we see it doing things which are dores-like, which are questionable, we can assume if it has the three main signs that that's just anomalous behavior, and it really is a kosher bird. According to others, no, once we see it actually trampling its food or whatever, then that leads us to be nervous. But basically, this lenient opinion says we need these three signs. Once you've got these three signs, then you're good to go. Okay? If you see it doing dores type things, then there are no machmirim mekilim, but basically the three signs are what's needed. That's the first approach. The second approach. No. Rashi's approach. You need four signs. It's not good enough just to have the three of the toe, the crop, and the gizzard. You also need to know that the bird is not a dores. Now, that's very difficult. How do you prove a negative? I show you a bird, it has three signs. And you say, well, I need to know that it's not a dores. So that's very difficult to know. Well, you're going to have to watch it for a week, for a year, for 10 years, to check, to see how much scrutiny does it need. There is one opinion that it's called, and remember this, the goose comparison. We're going to see this in the Shulchan Aruch. The goose comparison is that if we see that it has a wide beak and it has webbed feet, then that's good enough. There's no such thing as a bird of prey that has a wide beak and has webbed feet. So that's good enough to prove that it's not a dores, but according to this second view, you basically need all four signs. That it has to have the three good ones, and you have to know that it is not a bird of prey. And according to the most stringent view, which we saw Rashi espoused, none of it helps. You have to have a Masoret. Look in the Chochmas Adam. He passed Chochmas Adam in Danzig in the 19th century. He says, Aval, Anu Bevedinyosenu, in our countries, Kaimalan, we paskin ka'oisin ha'poskim, like those poskim that say, Dukal ha'simanim sheba'oilam loy mahanit lahatir. All the signs in the world will not help, as far as we're concerned today. We absolutely need a Masorah. Now, there are the three basic approaches. Again, just to reiterate, either we need three signs, or we need four signs, or signs are just irrelevant, and we need to have a Masorah. How does the Shulchan Aruch rule? This is the last piece that we need to put in place before we get on really to the issue of the turkey. The Shulchan Aruch basically, I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but the Mechaber, Rav Yosef Karo, goes basically with the middle Shita. He says, you need four signs. Three signs are not good enough. He says, you need four signs. You need all the three good ones and to know that it's not a dores. He says, you really need a Masorah if you possibly can. A Masorah would be helpful. Yeah? And then the Ramah comes along and says, for Ashkenazim, like Shitas Rashi, the Yesh Omrim She'ein Lismoch Afilu Azeh. You can't rely on any of this. On hunters, you can't rely on signs. The Ein Le'echol Shum Oif Eleba Masorah Shekiblu Boi Shehu Tahor. We need a Masorah today. Without a Masorah, V'chei Nogim, that is our practice, V'ein L'shanos, and don't mess with it. And by the way, a lot of Sfardim later started taking on this approach as well, that you absolutely need a Masorah, and it's no good anymore to have signs and to go start looking at the bird. Now, what qualifies as a Masorah? Few questions before we get on to turkeys. Can there be a negative Masorah? What if we have a tradition that we don't eat a certain bird? Does that go against someone else's tradition that they do? Who is allowed to start a Masorah? What kind of people? What group of people? What if you're visiting from one place to another? This we're going to see is the locusts issue as well. Are you allowed to eat locusts? I don't know if anybody on this Zoom has ever eaten locusts. Okay? I would wager that most of you have not even eaten locusts. If you go and have Shabbos with a group of Yemenites who serve up locusts, are you allowed to eat them or not allowed to eat them? What if you're visiting somebody and they assure you that this is kosher and you say, well, I don't know, I'm Ashkenazi, I don't really do anything that exciting, and I certainly don't eat locusts. Are you allowed to do that? Can you transfer a Masorah from one bird to another bird? What if I have a Masorah on bird A and along comes bird B and you say, well, pretty much. It's just like a version of the one we already have. Is that good enough? How much does it need to be like the one that we already know? And again, when it comes to turkey, we'll see some people say, well, it's just a big chicken, really, isn't it? And the answer is, well, no, actually, it's not just a big chicken. It doesn't look like a chicken, walk like a chicken, or cluck like a chicken. It doesn't lay eggs like a chicken, and it doesn't make friends with chickens. And therefore, you're going to have to ask, is it good enough just to say, well, we eat chickens, turkeys are similar enough. How does that work? So let's have a look now at that, and then we'll plug all this information in, and we will look at the issue of turkeys. So let's look, first of all, at a Rosh. This Rosh is the Rosh was on the Machmer side. The Rosh lived in Germany and then Spain in the 1200s, and he said the following. Shalt ala chasida. You've asked me about the stork. Do Jews eat stork or not? I'm not exactly sure whether the chasida is what we today call the stork, but we'll call it the chasida. Da, he says you should know. Ki ba'arteinu u'besfarad. In our countries, where he is now, in Spain, etc., ein ochlin of hamakane labatim. We don't eat certain types of birds. The lois in karim asen sigunya, and they're called in Spanish sigunya. The anakari lo chasida. We call this a chasida. We don't eat those kinds of birds. We don't eat that. Kach anu kolam yatena. This is our practice here. Uma naaselim kamoshe ochlin ata. Ah, what about places that do eat it? If we go to visit another place, heim yomrulah. They will say to you, these other people, Oy tahor, this is a kosher bird. Nechal b'masoiris, and it's eaten with our tradition, v'anu mekubalim shehu tahor, and we have a tradition that it's tahor. Is that good enough? Says the Rosh. Aval toch lakor acha kabalasam. Says, no, it's not good enough. You have to check out traditions. You can't just take them at face value. Shema adam echad, samach al chachmasa. Maybe it was one guy who made it up at the beginning. He saw this bird and he thought, that's good enough. Ubadak b'simanav, maybe he checked the signs. So Hechshirun, he said, yeah, that's kosher. Say, Lismachalta, how can you rely on that? Kishema dohetu, how do you know it's not a bird of prey? Again, the Rosh is from the Machmir, from the strict camp. You have to know it's not a bird of prey. How do you know? Va'oiki yesh teisha asat mili oifer, it's the name. There are so many non-kosher birds. Sheyesh l'chol echad gimel simanitahara. There are birds that have one of the kosher signs and they're not kosher. Okay? V'shnei mili oifer, there are even two types of trace birds. Sheyesh l'chol beit simanitahara. That have two of the kosher signs and they're not kosher. Hilkach ein lismoch al oifer al bedikat simanitahara. I don't like this, he says. V'chein matzini b'chachmei Talmud. Look at this terrible case in the Talmud where they ate this bird. Remember the swamp hen? They thought it was tar. They found what they thought were good enough signs. And then they realized they made a terrible mistake. All the more so in our generation. You can't rely on checking birds anymore. But I'd never eat this bird. I wouldn't eat this chasidah. Even if I went to their house for dinner, I wouldn't eat what they gave me. Ani machzik et ha-masorah shalanu. I trust our masorah. The kabbalat avaseinu chachmei Ashkenaz. I trust the Ashkenazim. He was originally Ashkenazi. Shehaita ha-tori Yerushalayim me-avaseinu, me-avaseyem, mi-emot ha-churban. This is very interesting. The Rosh says the Ashkenazim have a masorah that goes all the way back to the Beis HaMikdash. As opposed to other communities, which he says, I don't know, maybe a bit sketchy here and there. Interesting. He lived in Spain, don't forget, by this time. I trust the French as well. Always a bit of a dangerous thing, just trusting the French. But he trusted the French. I trust them more than I trust the people in that particular country that eats this chasidah. When you say you can eat a bird with a masoret, it's only if you don't have contrary information. But he says, since we have a tradition against it, a Masorah will not be good enough. So what did he say there? He said a few things. He said Masorah number one has to be reliable. You have to check it out. If it's not reliable, you can't just take it at face value. And number two, he said that I'll only rely on a Masorah if I don't have something negative working against it. If I have reason not to eat this bird, then the Masorah will not help. That's the first point. The Aruch HaShulchan in number 16, which I'm not going through in great detail, he's quite liberal on who can share which maseras. For example, he says, if you go from a place, I won't look at this inside, but, well, I'll leave it on the screen so you can look at it if you want. But he says, if you go to a place where they eat a certain bird, but you don't, you can eat it with them. As long as you don't have reason to believe that it's treif, for example. For example, if you come from a place where you just have no Masorah, neutral, zero Masorah, I don't really know what I'm doing on this thing. If somebody else says, don't worry, I have a Masorah, it's okay, then that's good enough, he says. And that's not called going against your minhag. You can, because you don't have a minhag, he says, not to eat it. You just have neutral. You just don't know what you're doing. So if he does know what he's doing, that's good enough. Similarly, he says, if you go from a place where they go from a place where they do eat a sender to a place where they don't, you can continue eating it like this, like you were at the beginning, as long as you don't go there to stay. Once you go there to settle, you have to fall in with the Masorah of the place, because otherwise it leads to anarchy, factions, lois is going to do, etc. So where does that leave us with Masorah? On the one hand, you can piggyback on someone else's Masorah, but not if you have a reason to doubt it. One thing is for sure, you cannot rely on names. Names are completely misleading. And I brought you any number of sources in the footnotes here that what one country calls this bird, another country uses the same name for a completely different bird. Rav Moshe talks about this. Some people have tried to write down their Masorah, even with pictures. There's a wonderful sefer from the beginning of the 1800s from Livorno, which sets out the Masorah of which birds they eat. Livorno had a very, since my son married a girl from Livorno, it seems that half the shirim I give have a connection with Livorno. But Livorno has an extremely strong Masorah, and they even drew pictures and showed you what birds were within their Masorah. Interestingly, they didn't have chickens in that. But it's difficult to rely on names. What about transferring Masorahs? And this is the last point before we get to turkeys. The answer is yes, you can, but there are a few tests. Test number one is kilayim, meaning would these birds be prohibited to crossbreed? If they would, okay, then you can't transfer the Masorah. Then there's something called the egg test. Do their eggs look similar? If two birds have similar looking eggs, then that might work. By the way, the rabbis give a really good test of what is a kosher egg and what is not a kosher egg. How do you know? If you find an egg, you don't know anything about the egg. So the rabbis say that if the egg is pointy at both ends or rounded at both ends, it's probably treif. If it's pointy at one end and round at the other end, it may not be treif. Okay, but that's an interesting thing to ask. They ask something called the neighbor test, which is, we saw this in the Tosefta. Do these birds hang out with each other? And then there's a rather amusing test called the zivug test, which is, if we put this bird together with its own species and other kosher birds, would it choose to mix with the kosher birds, or does it only stick to its own species? Which is an interesting question. And then there's the issue of crossbreeding, which is, can you crossbreed the birds? Some people say, if these birds crossbreed with each other, that is a good sign that the other one is also kosher, because only kosher birds breed with each other, but there's a big suffix as to whether that's true, and these tests, certainly the last one, may not be 100% reliable. Fine. Now, the moment you've all been waiting for the last 20 minutes, let's look at our friend, the turkey. Now you know a whole lot about kashrus of birds. Let's see how this works with turkeys. So, there are two kind of families of turkeys, and one of them is a wild turkey, and the other one is domesticated. We only eat the domesticated turkeys. Turkeys were domesticated thousands of years ago in ancient Mexico. They were discovered by the Europeans in the 16th century and brought over by the Cortez expedition by the Spaniards, who brought them to Europe in 1519. Okay? They reached England by 1524. Shakespeare, by the way, about 50, 60 years later, refers to turkeys. If you're interested where, I brought you in Twelfth Night, and I brought you a quote from the relevant speech where he talks about turkey. So in England, turkeys were already circulating by the late 1500s. In fact, and people need to be aware of this, in the 1500s there was more than just one new bird brought over from the New World. There were turkeys, but there was also something called the African guinea fowl. And one of the massive confusions that comes up in this period is that people gave incorrect names to all these birds. For example, why are turkeys called turkeys? I don't know if you've ever wondered that. They do not come from Turkey. They come from Mexico. So why on earth would they be called turkeys? So I brought you in the footnotes a number of suggestions. Some people suggest that they were brought over by merchants who they called They called Turkey merchants because they came from Constantinople at the time that was in the Ottoman Empire. So that's how they got called, became called Turkeys. Some people think they actually came from the Columbus thought they were peacocks, and the word apparently for peacock in the American language is tuca, so maybe that's why they were called turkeys. Some people thought that we were called Furkey, which was the name for them originally in America, and they called them Turkey. Basically, nobody knows why they're called turkeys. In fact, it's only actually the English that really call them turkeys. In Yiddish, what is the name for turkey in Yiddish, and what is the name for turkey in Hebrew? So in Hebrew, you know the name for turkey, which is Hadu. Hadu means what? Means India. And in fact, that is the name for turkey in Yiddish as well. It's the Indikahun. It's Indik. Indik is usually the name which is given to turkey. And in fact, there are more languages which call them Indik, which call them Indian hens, and that kind of thing, than they call them turkeys. So one of the complicating factors when you get into the responsa is it's not always 100% clear which kind of bird they're talking about. Are they talking about a turkey? Are they talking about a guinea fowl? Are they talking about something else which is called a kibitzer hen, which came over from the Middle East as well? And therefore, actually identifying these things can sometimes be quite challenging. Jews were eating turkeys throughout the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s. That's very clear. Only in the 1900s, people began to ask the obvious question, which is, oy vey, how on earth can we eat turkeys? Haven't we established that the only thing you can rely on these days, according to the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, is Masorah? Now, turkeys don't have a Masorah. How can they have a Masorah? They were only discovered in the New World. A Masorah presumably means, like chickens, it goes already back to the ancient world. A bird that was discovered in the 1500s can't possibly have what we call a halachic Masorah, so how on earth can anybody eat it? Now, on the tests, on the three tests, by the way, turkeys score quite highly. They have an extra toe, they have a crop, and they have a peelable gizzard. So they get 3 out of 3. Are they a dores? Well, doesn't look like it. They don't really do anything that birds of prey do, with one exception we'll see at the end for the descendants of the shlah. But they don't have a Masorah. That's the problem. They can't because they were relatively recently discovered. They don't do very well, by the way, on transferring the Masorah. So to turn around and say that a chicken and a turkey are really the same thing, halachically just doesn't stack. Their eggs look completely different. They don't crossbreed at all. You have to do that in the lab. By the way, turkeys don't even breed with each other these days. You should just know. Turkeys have been domesticated and genetically modified to the extent that they're actually too fat to actually get close enough with each other to breed naturally, which is one of the sad facts about being a turkey, apart from Thanksgiving, I suppose, which they're not that excited about either. The only way you can actually breed turkeys these days is in the lab. So turkeys don't actually breed with chickens either. I would add, and it's actually interesting, that turkeys do breed with pheasants, and pheasants breed with chickens. So I suppose that makes turkeys and chickens kind of machatonim in some way, but they don't breed with each other. And therefore turkeys don't do very well on the comparison with chickens. So how are we going to say that turkeys are kosher? So what I want to do is I want to give you 7 different ways of justifying eating turkeys, which is, and you can work out which of these you think is the most likely to be the one that people rely on. Because Jews eat turkeys. Pretty much all Jews do eat turkeys, and some people don't. I can see some head shaking that you know people who don't eat turkeys. We'll get to those people soon. But most kashrut organizations say that turkeys are kosher. Why? Why do they say that? So, suggestion number one, and this was brought by a few of the Mephoroshim, that maybe there was an older Masorah that they're relying on, the Kafah Chaim from Baghdad. Look what he says here. Masha anu korin tarnigol englishi, the English chicken. Now again, is he talking about turkey? Probably yes here, okay. English ahinna, mutter, okay. This is a English hen, this is actually mutter. Afa pisha hodu kafuf keduchifat, even though it shares some characteristics with a duchifat, which is trei. Mikol Markom Kol Simane Tara Yeshba. It has all the simanim. Okay, Tishkayach. We know it has the simanim. But what about a Masora? The Kasav Yitachen Shezeh Shekorin Oisa B'Baghdad. In Baghdad they call this, now my Arabic is not what it should be, Yadich Al-Hind. Yadich Al-Hind. They call it some Indian whatever it is. V'hu ba me'arei Hindia. And it comes actually from India. They eat it there. The Indians have an ancient Masora. There have been Jews in India pretty much forever. And if the Indians eat this, then there must be a Masora. The problem, of course, is that this bird does not come from India. I mean, it may have come via, you know, the Middle East, but it doesn't come originally from India. So to say that the Indians have a Masora, either we're talking about a different bird, or it's just a mistake, because this bird comes from Mexico, and there ain't no Jews in Mexico earlier than the 16th century. So that's not going to help us. The Shoel Umeshiv, who is a very important Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson in the 19th century, got very upset about people who wanted to trafe Turkey. He said, it's absolutely outrageous, and you can't do it. And look at the argument he makes. Which is very interesting. He actually argues with the Shulchan Aruch, which is doable. People don't always agree with the Shulchan Aruch. And he says the following. Look at the end of the first line. Ke'etzba egered me'ir Kamenetz. I got this letter, your letter from Kamenetz. Asher Arav Asram. The Rav Asad Turkeys in Kamenetz. Ba'alkein loy ha'alehem basal yontef ha'avar. And therefore the Jews had no meat for yontef. They'd all bought turkeys from the market. The Rav turned around and said, guys, turkeys are trafe. And everyone had to eat tofu, or whatever the equivalent was, for their Yom Tov dinner. No meat. He says, the Shoel Umeshiv, this is outrageous. I'll tell you what the root of the issue is. If these birds have three kosher signs, it's just that we don't know for sure if they are birds of prey. As far as I'm concerned, he goes, I paskin like the lenient view in the Rishonim. If it's got three signs, and I don't know that it's a bird of prey, then that's good enough. The hinin ashitas may Rebbe Moshe bar Yosef, hamuchuveri mikol ashitas. And that lenient opinion, as far as I'm concerned, is the best of the opinions. It's followed by so many people. Asher HaRamban, HaRashba, HaRitva, HaGos Maimonis. Look at all these people who follow that lenient opinion. Kaimu v'kimu v'kiblu ashitas azot. They all follow this opinion. Kol sheyesh lo gibel simanim, if it has three signs, rak shaloi noida, it's just that we don't know, im heim dorisin, heim kashir. He says, I'll tell you why turkeys are kosher. Because they check all the boxes. They've got the extra toe, they've got the crop, they've got the gizzard. A peelable gizzard. I don't know if it's a doiress. Potato, you don't need to know. As long as you don't know that it's a doiress, then you're good to go. Uladat, Rabbeinu Tam says, even if it's got two signs, okay, fine. All that's left is really the other Machmer Shitas, including the Shulchan Aruch. He says, but as far as I'm concerned, we don't need it. We don't have to worry about that. And on Afla Rashi, even according to Rashi, Talib HaMasoros, he says, you need a Masora. And Imeir Lechem, I'm going to tell you, he says, Ki Yesh Li Gavayis Eidus, I have testimony, Mehar Beloimdi Me'eretz HaKodesh, for many people from Eretz Israel that have come from there, Asher Hayupol that were in Eretz Israel, Ka'ashir Ro Oifan Ha'Oifes, and they saw these birds in Israel. People were eating turkey in Israel even 300 years ago. He'idu Shekamoy Elo Oifes Ochlim Be'eretz HaKodesh. He said, you want a Masora? I'll give you a Masora. The Jews in Israel eat turkey. If they eat turkey, if it's good enough for them, why is it not good enough for you? It's got all the three signs, and it's even got a mini Masora, let's say. The Libi Oimeli, I want to say, he says, Shirashi ba'atma b'ra'oysa koshi asugia, when Rashi kind of threw his arms up and said, because of all the complications, lefi dvarav ha'akochak talab ha'masora, that you need a masora, ba'akoponim kan yesh masora. We have enough of a masora. And he says, and I want to tell you something else. That ani me'lechem she'ani ba'atmi ochalatam. I eat turkey. I love turkey, says Rav Yosef Nathanson. It's one of my favorite dinners, mishufri shufri. It's the best you can get. So I'm going to eat turkey. Umashe Kosov, and you see nothing's changed. Umashe Kosov, what they write, should be Yerushalayim Asruzer. They write that the rabbis of Yerushalayim after this, Sheker Muchlet. It's complete lies. Don't make things up, he says. Okay? And he brings He brings Eidah stood in Yerushalayim, they ate it. And look at how he ends. This is really fascinating. Look at the last three lines. Va'oy lanu. Says, oy vey to us. Mipnei pirtzas ador, because of what's happening in our generation. Sheyon ru'a api korosim. The heretics will now point to us and say, ru'u, ki tara nitchalek, nitchalka, kurua, prua, l'shleim, atzai gizarim. The Torah is a mess. All the rabbis make it up as they go along. Everyone does something different. They're going to point to us and say that. Amrim chalila chalila, God forbid, God forbid. Ha'oifet heim kshem. These birds are kosher. The hama'ararim, and the people who want to be machmir, rak mipnei gaiva, they're just arrogant. Laharot la'olam kihema kadoshim. They just want to make out that they're frum. They want to look frummer than everybody else, and therefore they have to have something that they can prohibit, so they point the finger at Turkey. Really remarkable tshuva. Therefore he says that the three signs are all you need. That's why Turkey is a kosher. You don't need a besoros. That's the second approach. The third approach is, and this is Rav Herschel Schechter's approach, is that you do need a Masoret, it's based on the Erugas HaBoisem, but you only need a Masoret for something where we're not sure. Where we're not sure. Meaning, remember this case of the swamp hen in the Gemara, where they said people started eating it, and then Oy Vez Mir, they saw that it was doing Doris kind of things. That's because they didn't give it long enough, says Rav Herschel Schechter. Turkeys have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. People have been breeding them, watching them, looking, checking. They don't do anything wrong. Nowadays, they have all that needs to be kosher. They have the three signs. And they have, there's no reason to suspect them of being a doris. That's the point. You only need a masora when we're not sure. Here, we are sure. And as I said, Rav Herschel Schechter says that this is the reason why Turkey is a kosher, clearly, because we don't have a suffix anymore. That's the third reason. The fourth reason is that people say they're like chickens. I don't think that really works. They're not like chickens, so I wouldn't put much store by that, although there are some who've suggested it. The fifth and sixth reasons are fascinating, and they're more historical. The fifth reason goes like this. It says, listen, who brought turkeys over to Europe? The Sephardim did. Was Christopher Columbus Ashkenazi or Sephardi? Well, he wasn't Jewish, or was he, depending on who you ask. But Christopher Columbus for sure was not Ashkenazi, and the Jews that ate turkey at the beginning were all Sephardim. Now remember the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch didn't insist on a Masorah. The Shulchan Aruch just said you needed the three signs and the goose comparison, and that's what they had. So they never needed a Masorah to start with. The Sephardim ate turkeys perfectly properly without the need for a Masorah, and now the Ashkenazim can eat them. Why? Because the Sephardim eat them. That's good enough as a Masorah. Meaning, what do we say? If you go from a place where they have a Masorah and you don't, you can rely on their Masorah unless you know there's something wrong. We don't know anything wrong with turkeys, and therefore we can rely on it. It came first through the Sephardim. Another reason, the reason number six I brought on the sheet, is because maybe Ashkenazim ate them. But doesn't the Ramah say in Shulchan Aruch that you need a Masorah? Well, when was the Ramah born? The Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, was born in 1530. His psak was only really popularized in the late 1500s. The Shulchan Aruch was published, without the Ramah, in 1565. The Ramah's editions were published shortly thereafter. And therefore, by the time the Ramah became the, if you like, guiding light for the Ashkenazim, it was too late. The turkeys had already come in, and maybe, it could be, the Ashkenazim relied on the more lenient opinions up until that point. And the fact that the Ramah came in later and said, you need an ancient Masorah, okay, shkoyach, the turkeys just got in under the wire. The birds that came later, okay, that's a problem. There's an issue with the mother bird, just the name escapes me now, can't remember what it's called now, the Muscovy hen. The Muscovy hen, that's a whole other question, that maybe came too late because the Ramah was already established. The last reason why turkeys... many Mephoroshim were very insistent that turkeys have to be kosher, is because, listen, it's a meta-halachic reason. Are you really going to turn around and say that Jews, from communities, Choshev HaRabonim, have been eating treif for hundreds of years? You can't do that. Number one, the Netziv insists on this. Number one, he says we have a tradition that Gemara brings this down, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not let a community, by mistake, commit such an Aveira for hundreds of years. And number two, it's called Motzi Laz al HaRishonim. You can't speak Lashon Hara about people that came in generations before by saying they were not frum enough. Now we're frummer. Now we know what we're doing. They didn't know what they were doing. That's a terrible, terrible thing to say. You can't cast aspersions on them. And he has a tshuva that deals with a certain kind of goose, which they were also eating. And he says exactly this reason. Look at the underline. Ein lanu la'asram. We may not prohibit that which people have been eating. We may not say that generations past were eating a treif animal. Ah, turkey doesn't have a Masorah. Shkaiah. Okay, doesn't have a Masorah. There's no reason why we should think it's treif specifically. And the fact that hundreds of people were eating it, they wouldn't have been eating it unless that was the right thing to do. So there you have it. There are many reasons why turkey is fine. Either you can turn around and say that I don't need a Masorah, and the halacha is like the opinions that, you know, that say you only need the three signs, and it has them. Or you can turn around and say it has enough of a Masorah because people have been eating it. Or you can say we only need a Masorah when we're not clear, and here we are clear, we've been looking at turkeys for centuries and they seem fine. Or you can say that they came in under the Sfaradim who didn't need a Masorah, and now the Ashkenazim can piggyback on that. Or you can say that the Ashkenazim started eating them before they needed, they had this exact meaning of Masorah. Or you can just say, like the Nassif says, that we don't go back and rewrite history and cast aspersions on the activities of generations of Jews who ate turkey and had no problem with that. And by the way, this is the position of most 20th century poskim. Rav Moshe Feinstein said there was no problem with turkey. He didn't much like Thanksgiving, you should know. That's a separate issue. But there's no problem with turkey. I have a shir on Thanksgiving, which you can cross-refer to. Rav Soloveitchik, who was more okay about Thanksgiving as well, he certainly said that turkey was fine. But there are people who don't eat turkey. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky did not eat turkey. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky says it wasn't that his family had a Masorah not to, it's just that Rav Yaakov's wife's family had a Masorah not to, and he didn't want to upset his wife and eat turkey in front of her when she, I mean, he could have just said to her, sweetheart, like, my family do eat turkey, so now's your time to eat. She didn't want to eat it, so he said, if you don't eat it, I won't eat it, which sounds like Rav Yaakov. And Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky also doesn't eat turkey because his father didn't, although Rav Shmuel's wife and children apparently do eat it. And then there are the descendants of the Shloh. And here is, it's not quite 100% known, but the Shloh HaKadosh, who was Rav Yishai ben Avram Levi Horowitz, sometimes people with the name Horowitz are descended from the Shloh. He was a very important Rav in the 16th century in Eretz Israel. The Shloh apparently told his family and his Talmidim that he saw a turkey doing Doresh type things, walking over its food, picking at its food with its talons, etc. And he said, on that basis, I'm not going to eat turkey, and therefore there are members of the Horowitz family, and I actually have a friend from way back whose family is from the Talmidim of the Shloh, and they also, the male members of the family, do not eat turkey, and therefore usually if people don't eat turkey, it comes down from the Shloh. There are people, you should just know, who are descended from the Shloh, who are not religiously observant at all. They eat treif on Yom Kippur, but they won't eat turkey, because turkey is part of their family tradition. This friend of mine, he said he has completely irreligious family, unobservant family members, and they say that any time people start eating turkey, God forbid, terrible things happen to them. One guy fell off a cliff, and one guy did this, and one guy did that, and they put it down to eating turkey, even though, again, they don't keep kosher any other way. So there are families in which there is a tradition not to eat turkey, but usually it's connected with a Shloh. There are other families. There's a family called Lapidus that has the minhag, a family called Frankel that has the minhag. I'd be very interested to hear from you if any of your families have a personal minhag not to eat turkey, and if so, why? There's a couple of people came in on the chat. Someone said to me here, someone put here, the Europeans thought the Americas were India. That's, of course, very true, that the West Indies and the Indies, etc., they assumed that was the case, but after a while they realized it was clearly not. Someone popped here, does Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky won't eat turkey because he stated that they were unknown in Europe. That's interesting. But I don't, they were unknown in Europe before the 1500s, correct. But they were very much known in Europe from the mid-1500s onwards, so that could be part of the issue. Someone asked, does number 7 apply to swordfish? Meaning, if many generations ate swordfish, why? Who are we to turn around and say we're not going to eat them anymore? The difference there is that swordfish was always a question, and there were a few communities around the Mediterranean who did eat them. But there wasn't a general widespread minhag across the Jewish world that everybody ate them. So I think it's a little bit different. With Turkey, literally, you know, all communities basically held they were okay until a few people in the 1900s started to point fingers and say, it's not good enough, we can't eat them anymore. Anyway, that's, I think, as much as anybody cares to know about Turkey. I wish you bon appetit. And hopefully you will enjoy your turkey over the week. And if anyone stops eating turkey as a result of this shear, please don't blame me. Next week we're going to look at something fascinating, which is the issue of the zebu and a little bit on the giraffe and the ben pekua, which is another area which is animals. But that's, we're going to leave birds for now. And after we finish, please God, this mini-series in a couple of weeks, we're going to move on to other areas which are not cashless related. But I hope that these few shiurim on cashless are enlightening in some way. Again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for today's shiur and the happy birthday to Lewis Mack. And also I'd like to wish Philip Savrinsky that he should have a Rechus Yamim and that his mother's neshama should have an aliyah. And I look forward to seeing you all next week. Have a healthy and productive week, and looking forward to seeing you soon. Is somebody asking me a question, or is someone asking someone else a question?
Question. I have a question. Where can I get a copy of
this? Okay, so if you email me, you can get a copy, but also let me just point out that, or you can send me a WhatsApp, that the source sheets go up before the shiur on the link that the OU posts to the shiur. He puts the source sheets there, and also David, who is here on the shiur to make sure that everything goes smoothly, he also posts the link on the recording of the shiur. So if you go on the OU site and you go to the recordings, the video recordings, the sheets are there for download as well. You can always contact me directly, but obviously I prefer that 150 people don't all write to me and ask me for the shiur. If they can just download it from the link, that works better for, I think, for everybody. So that's how you'll get them. But in the meantime, have a great week, and we'll see you soon.